Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's the little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms and restrictions apply.
New VanCast for you as the Canucks fall yet again to Connor McDavid and the Edmonton Oilers. Drancer, we got a lot to get to. I mean, the game, sure, yeah. There were some storylines there, but obviously the big news of the last 24 hours is Abbotsford. And we've mentioned this before, Abbotsford is near and dear to the VanCast heart.
It is.
Actually, that's not totally true. Abbotsford is near and dear to the Nuxcast part, right?
Wow, true, yeah. Well, I don't think either way we hadn't launched yet.
No, I know.
It was. And the name, like, I do want our listeners to know this. The name never mattered to us. Like, I remember I sent you a list of like 18 names, yep. And you were like, I don't care.
Totally true.
Yeah. I like spent so much time on them. And then do you remember I really wanted it to be like front and center, like JPAT and Drancer do and then podcast name. That was like the thing I really wanted.
Right.
And then when we agreed to do Nuxcast or something that was like a little more simple, we put with Drancer and JPAT on the back end. And I don't know if anyone has noticed this, but just like for some context for you, like I'm really stubborn about still tweeting that out when I tweet the podcast. I think this is something that I care about and you don't. But that's so it goes.
So, yeah, I mean, the quick backstory is that Canucks-Ottawa preseason game in Abbotsford, you and I went out independently. We didn't travel out there together, but cover the morning skate. And then rather than returning home and then going back for game time, we set up shop at the Browns in Abbotsford.
Decamped.
Right across the highway and had a five-hour working lunch. I think we each did a couple of radio hits during that time. But we buttoned down on the details of the podcast in the booth at Browns there that afternoon.
So yeah, we did. We spent a lot of time at that Browns. And hopefully we'll be able to do that again, right? Like, hopefully we'll be out there for an AHL morning skate, you know? And like, I honestly will look forward to it. Maybe we'll bring our podcast gear. You know what? First of all, there's a lot of significance to that day in particular. Like, the Canucks toured that facility, and I think it was widely noted by senior management that, you know, having not really been there with the whole team and the whole staff and everybody, in 8 years, really, that it was still ready to go as an AHL building, right? Like, you can't go to that building and not come away from it thinking, wow, this is like a top tier AHL facility today and probably will be for another 10 years without renovation. You know, I mean, you go up and down other sort of possible markets for your AHL franchise in the West, and it's like the Abbotsford Center is still going to be one of the top three or four you find. It's also close. It's also not going to require renovation for another 15 years, probably, in the context of what an AHL team requires. Like, you know, relative to a building like the Pacific Coliseum, where you would have had to renovate like the Jumbotron and, you know, the locker rooms and on and on. This is ready to go. This was ready. That's a huge get for the Canucks. Like, even when they first moved to Utica, the odd required like a hugely complicated, publicly financed renovation project to get to a point where it's still not, you know, a scene in AHL sort of circles as like a high end sort of, you know, facility from a player's perspective. It's definitely a top 10 place to play, maybe a top 5 place to play in terms of environment. But anyway, so this made a ton of sense, and this always made a ton of sense, particularly because the city of Abbotsford's continued to lose a ton of money. Like, there's this horrifying graphic if you go look over Abbotsford City reports, and it says like the proportion of the city's budget that goes to various things, and the Abbotsford's like deficit, the Abbotsford Center deficit for the city of Abbotsford has been getting more manageable since the supply fee agreement that they had with the Abbotsford Heat and the Calgary Flames sort of expired about 6 years ago now. But still, it's like, you know, 6%. Fire and rescue, like 5% Abbotsford Center, like 2% libraries. It's like, oh, you know, like the city needed an anchor tenant. Abbotsford needed an anchor tenant desperately. And to land the Canucks AHL affiliate, I think everyone believes that'll work, even though the AHL experiment with the Abbotsford Heat was an unmitigated money hole disaster for all involved. No, except the Calgary Flames.
Yeah. You've written an accompanying article. It's up. It's at The Athletic, so people can check that out. You talked to Robert Esch, and man, like, I thought really interesting quotes at the back end of your piece, Tom, where he gave really high praise to Chris Gear and Ryan Johnson. And, you know, Chris Gear is an assistant general manager of the Vancouver Canucks. He still doesn't have a massive front-facing public profile, I think. The VIPs know the name, certainly involved in a lot of contract work for the Vancouver Canucks, smart guy, lawyer, all of that stuff. But, you know, when you think of a farm team and a parent team agreement, I guess I was a little surprised. Like, there were some names that seemed to be missing when Robert Esch went directly to Chris Gear and to Ryan Johnson.
Well, I think the thing about Gear to keep in mind is that, you know, he's been with the Canucks. Like, he's relatively new to the public consciousness of hockey fans because he's been with the Canucks for a long time as the VP legal, right? Yeah. That title he still holds, by the way. So he was like central to the relocation effort back when they acquired the Peoria franchise in 2013, right? So he was super familiar with Esch. Back in 2013. Now, in talking to Esch last night, I also invited him onto the VanCast, and I think we'll do that at some point in the next couple of weeks, which I think would be awesome because his perspective on some, you know, super minutia Canucks topics, I think would be fascinating. Plus, you know, he's a character. Like, he is a character. And one thing to note too is when the Canucks parked in Utica, it was a huge gamble. Like, this was a guy realizing a dream. He'd, you know, campaigned hard on social media and a variety of sort of like, you know, like dreamer platforms to bring AHL hockey back to Utica, right? Like, it was just this civic dream that he had. We'll renovate the Odd. We'll, you know, and then he managed to get the financing done. He managed to get a huge public works project done. And then he made the economics work to the point that everyone in the American League sort of area says, you know, knows that the Utica hockey market works for American League hockey, right? The Utica will have a team again. It might be an ECHL team. It might be an AHL team. Who knows? But they'll have a team again. And a big part of the reason is that Mohawk Valley Group is seen as a, you know, top-notch, reliable operator. That's a huge credit to Esch. Like, he's become a community and business leader over the last 8 years. And it's a major reason why this arrangement lasted so long, even though, you know, almost from the outset, Esch's group sort of understood that the Canucks would eventually move west.
I mean, interesting timing for this announcement by the Canucks 90 minutes before faceoff, half an hour after Travis Green had confirmed that Jack Rathbone was going to make his NHL debut. Like, they were getting a little bit of buzz off, you know, the debut of J-Bone, and whether it was done as sort of a smokescreen to deflect from, you know, what was going to happen on the ice. Also, the fact that they put out an announcement, you know, for the intention to move this team, it needs the rubber stamp of the AHL, which it's expected to get. But, you know, you don't see organizations generally putting out press releases. Like, they didn't put out a press release that they were intending to sign Thatcher Demko or intending to sign Tanner Pearson. Like, it just the whole way that it went down seemed a little bit strange to me. I mean, they're going to get there.
It didn't to me. It didn't to me. No, okay. And here's why. So I've been sniffing around this for a while, right? Like, Esh has not returned a lot of my phone calls until last night. I've been asking Canucks sources and they've been like, oh, no, you know, I really don't want to talk about that. I left a message for Henry Braun, the mayor of Abbotsford, last week. I definitely talked to the AGM of the Abbotsford Center. Like, I've been sniffing around here. I even was calling some of the people involved in the 2013 relocation, like ex-Fraser Valley sports and entertainment execs, just trying to see which way the winds were blowing. And honestly, I'd even called people with various like business interests, like connected to some of the building operators or the building sort of big building conglomerates, AEG and Oakview, trying to get a sense of, you know, what markets were being whispered about in the United States, and like cone of silence, absolute cone of silence on this. So then the AHL distributed to, you know, board of governors and alternate governors, the agenda for the meeting on Thursday this week. And so I start making calls to all my AHL contacts, and I'm like, what does it say about the Canucks? Like, I know that they submitted a brief for relocation. They have to have. What does it say? And what it said, JPAT, was it was hidden. It was close. Like, it was hidden in that the Canucks essentially framed it as a bid to relocate to one of the pre-approved jurisdictions in the West. It's just like, I was just like, damn it. So, you know, to me, there's just a, when I see something that's like relatively closely guarded, when I see something that's being deliberately hidden, and then when I see the team make a sort of conditional announcement, like, my understanding is there's a conditional framework. One of the conditions is that the AHL Board of Governors has to approve it. That's essentially a formality, but you can't come out and be like, we're relocating to Utica before the AHL Board of Governors meetings. And if you wait until Thursday, like, you know, I'm blowing up every AHL connected board of governor I know, right? Like, and I'm probably not the only one sniffing to get this before the Canucks do, right? Like, if you want to control your message, you kind of have to be a little bit proactive with it,
I suppose. But still, 90 minutes before faceoff was on, like, do it mid-afternoon at that point. I don't imagine really anything had changed between mid-afternoon and 90 minutes before game time. Whatever. I mean, the news is out there. It was going to get out there. I was just, the timing of it seemed a little bit strange to me.
Yeah, I guess I don't know. To me, that didn't set off my BS detectors personally. Just because I thought it made sense that the Canucks wanted to be the first to announce it, wanted to get an Aquilini quote into the thing, wanted to control this story, as opposed to it being, you know, first broken by, you know, someone like Dhaliwal. And so, you know, I'm not shocked by the timing of it. I don't read a ton into it personally. That's just my view. You know, there's no, for me anyway, there's no sort of smackings of cynicism in the timing of the announcement.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Do you know anything about the arrangement? Because we see this with other NHL, AHL teams. Like, they're going to set up in Abbotsford, which we all know is an hour-ish, depending on traffic, down the highway. But do you think that, like, with them being that close, is there any opportunity to play a few games a year at Rogers Arena? Like, do you think they would bring the team downtown and give the players the big league experience?
Yeah, I mean, I would think so. And I'll be curious to see, too, what the Canucks do in terms of, you know, a preseason slate with, like, the Seattle Kraken coming in, right? Like, won't it make a ton of sense, for example, to do, like, a game in Everett, you know, and a game in Abbotsford, right? Or, like, a game in Prince George and a game in Tacoma? Like, doesn't that make sense for both sides to sort of use each other as a brand extension in both of your various municipalities and sort of play up that I-5 thing. Like a lot of teams that are close geographically do stuff like that. I bet we're going to see stuff like that. So I wouldn't be shocked if we see the inverse too, JPAT. Like maybe we'll see, I mean, the Canucks could now potentially, for example, create like a relatively unique product, right? Where you have like a Saturday doubleheader. You know, you can market a Saturday doubleheader, and you know, maybe it's even a like a 4 p.m. start for the Canucks and like a nooner, you know what I mean? And it's like targeted to families, and you could discount prices to the first game, or you could buy a package, or I mean the business spillover opportunities for the Canucks as an extension of their brand here are endless, literally endless. And so, you know, I'm really curious to see what that looks like. But yeah, do I think that there's an opportunity to see that? Yes. And I also think there's an opportunity for the Canucks to go back and play additional preseason games in Abbey.
Right. And we know the benefits when the two teams are playing home games and they're in the same vicinity, then it makes it easy to bring players in and out. There will still be challenges when either of these teams is on the road. That's life. But I mean, it just makes so much sense on the hockey ops side, but it makes sense on the branding and the marketing side as well. And there's a ton of opportunities there. I saw in the press release that they said it will have a new name. So I tweeted that out last night and I basically asked for suggestions, which I quickly regretted because it's Canucks Twitter, right?
I know.
Like, there were some good ones, but people just can't help themselves. Like, now was not the time to be drawing links between Jake Virtanen and the Vancouver Canucks and everything else. Ugh, like,
awful.
But I got a lot of those. But I have to point out, and I should have jotted down the Twitter handle or the guy's name. I liked the fact. It actually made me laugh when he said the team has to be referred to as Les Habitants. I thought that one was pretty creative. I don't think it's going to work
necessarily. Sorry, the witch?
Les Habitants. Like,
I like that.
Abbey taunts, yes. You know, I think of Abbotsford. I think throughout my childhood, we would always drive out to the air show. So, like, there's a strong history with aviation, and I saw a lot of, you know, the Abbotsford Aviators, or the, I think Arrows was one that you jumped in on. You know, the pilots.
You need to have an aviation link. I think that's important.
Well, and like there's a, you know, the Abbotsford
there's
pilots
a history
were,
of it.
Yeah, the pilots were a junior B team for a long lot of years. They've got that.
And the Flyers.
And they've got
that. And there was the Abbotsford Flyers, right? Like you have to have an aviation connect unless you go with like a wider, like unless you're the Fraser Valley somethings.
Right.
To expand your market.
And that's a possibility. I mean, you could use the F and the V. You got the V right there. Like there are some branding possibilities that, you know, you could play around. So I'll be curious. I'm not going to get too worked up about the name.
They're going to have to be Abbotsford, I think, considering the fact that it's a facility with such close ties to the city, and considering that I'm sure the city will be in some way subsidizing the Canucks, and probably, you know, it'll probably be a fair deal for them so long as the building is full. Like, I think you'll have to go Abbotsford. And let's not understate the risk here from, you know, like the Abbotsford market is seen by veteran American League hockey business people as soft based on the Abbotsford Heat experience. And like those buildings, I mean, you went and covered some of those games, right, JPAT? Like in the Chicago Wolves era, it was grim, right? Like attendance was brutal, except when the Wolves came through.
Right. And so I did not see another game other than when the Wolves were here. So my experience is a little bit jaded just because the building was fairly full that night, but I totally understand. Yeah. Look, to me, it never made sense, Tom. It just never made sense to bring your chief rival's American Hockey League affiliate into your backyard and somehow think that people were going to gravitate just because there was a hockey team there. Like it just, the stakes are in the ground, the Canucks and the Flames. Like it was bound to fail right from the outset. So like if people hold those notions, I think they have to be prepared to move off those stances pretty quickly because this is a completely, completely different scenario.
It is a completely different scenario, but nonetheless, there's something to be said for, you know, like 7,000 is a pretty big AHL building. Like, are you going to be able to fill that every night? What does the business interests look like? Ian McIntyre reported on the Sportsnet broadcast that the club had already received some deposits. That's a good sign. You know, and then of course coming out of COVID too, right? Like what does the arena experience even look like?
Yeah.
So, you know, there are still some risks here from a Canucks perspective, but it's worth noting the Fraser Valley has grown a lot in the intervening eight years while the Canucks have been in Utica, right? Like Abbotsford's 15% bigger. Maple Ridge has grown a commensurate amount. You know, Langley, on and on, right? Like there's a lot of development going on there. So that's sort of, you know, the Canucks will hope pose, you know, a positive indicator anyway for the success of this AHL franchise. One last brand synergy to get to, by the way, is you can sort of trial looks and jerseys and different things too. And you know, this is something the Canucks are pretty good at. Like one advantage to having had so many, you know, different jerseys in your history is that you've got a lot of material. You got a lot of material to draw from that links the Canucks, you know, visually to an Abbotsford team. And the V and the A, you know, I think is a particularly durable opportunity. I'm going to be fascinated to see what branding opportunities the Canucks can come up with out of this. But, you know, if done right, and if this is successful, this should be like, you know, a license to print money, not to mention the fact that presumably, well, not even presumably, for sure, you're going to see a ton of interesting jobs for hockey people in our community come about out of this, from the broadcast side to equipment guys to, you know, social and PR folks to additional team services employees. You know, this, if you have an interest in hockey in the Vancouver market or in our community more generally, you know, this is something that's a win-win for all involved.
Well, I mean, this one seems obvious to me. I mean, the very first brand opportunity that this new franchise should go for, you know, they've got to get ads on the ice, and there's that spot in the trapezoid that we see in both Ottawa and Montreal. Manscaped would make perfect sense, would it not?
It would. It would. I thought, absolutely, especially on the farm.
Yes.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
All right, so that was the big news of the last 24 hours or so. There was a game played. I know the results don't matter at this stage anymore. I do want to get your thoughts, though, on a couple of things out of the game, but first, we have to thank Katie Strang. She joined us on our Tuesday podcast. It was a special episode. It was a little different for us. It was stepping outside our comfort zones, sort of trying to unpack the Jake Virtanen allegations, the reasons the team has placed him on leave. And we brought Katie Strang, who has made a career of incredible, you know, investigative journalism. And it was great to get a female perspective as well on the story. So if you haven't had a chance, it was a game day. Maybe you saw it, but you haven't had a chance. Put it aside. But I think it's really important, Tom, that people go back and listen to that. And we got a lot of really good feedback on it that I think it sort of opened the eyes to a lot of the listeners just in things that they hadn't thought about, you know, around a very sensitive story.
Yeah. No, and I appreciate all the feedback that I've received anyway in the past 24 hours, not just from, you know, our listeners, but also from various survivors groups, to anyone who's reached out to me with that message. You know, I mean, I've responded to everyone and thanked them for sharing that detail with me and also for their kind words. But, you know, I think we went about that the right way. I don't think we could have gone about it the right way, J-Pat, and, you know, between us, like without Katie, right? Like we really needed.
Yeah, absolutely.
An expert in that specific area to join us. You know, Katie's done a lot of work on this. She's done it better than anyone. And, you know, anyway, I was heartened to see the response, and I think, you know, I think we did that the right way. I'm proud of us for, you know, that mature approach. And, you know, I think the podcast accomplished a lot in terms of hopefully educating our listeners, educating ourselves, frankly, and, you know, also extending, you know, the seriousness to which this issue and these allegations deserve, while also extending the presumption of innocence, you know, as well. So I'm really happy with how that came out. And Katie, of course, I thank her for her time and her knowledge and being willing to share it with our listeners.
Yeah. And the other thing that I think we were both really happy about, too, was Monday night was Botchard Project night at Rogers Arena. Oh, and not just Monday night, it was all day. And the opportunity to meet Arash, Clarissa, and Lachlan and get to work with them. And Kat Botchford got it right. I mean, she picked three incredible candidates. They embraced the spirit of it. I'm really looking forward to seeing the finished product, the stories that they wrote. They were champs when, and full credit to the Canucks PR as well, for we weren't quite sure in these COVID times and Zoom and everything else how this was going to unfold, but Canucks PR went above and beyond to give
these three
access to the players that they had requested. And so, you know, this is going to make their finished product that much better. So it was great. I mean, and to see Quadrelli and Faber, like the place was crawling with Botchard Project candidates on Monday night, the new and the old. And it was a really good night all around. And on top of everything else, they got to see a game in person, which very few people have done this year. Oh, and they saw McDavid go off for 4 points as well. So I would think that can, you know, all things considered, a pretty memorable night. And I think it was. I think they've all expressed that part of it in social media.
Well, and I'm glad that they were able to do it together. You know, that's something that I think we maybe even consider for normal times, like watching those three become friends over the course of the day and have fun at the rink together. I mean, that's sort of, you know, an underrated part, I think, something we didn't have last year. Everyone got their own day, which I thought was cool too, but especially with how dehumanizing the experience of covering games can be in this, you know, sort of pandemic world at the moment. I think having that human touch was important. Having that ability for them to meet each other, I think worked or helped sort of address that. And, you know, it's something I wonder about considering, because one thing I thought about a lot was like, that was a fun day at the rink. And, you know, I mean, we talk a lot about Botchford's legacy because of his work product, because of his mentorship, because of who he was, but he was also just a lot of fun at the rink. Yep. and on my drive home on, you know, Monday night, I was reflecting on that. I was just thinking that there was something about that spirit that worked, that made sense to me when I consider, you know, Botchford's legacy and what we want this project to be. So no, it was a great day.
So really quick story, because at the tail end, like we hung around for the post game Zooms, then we said our goodbyes and you and I walked out and we got in the elevator and we were going down to the parking garage at Rogers Arena, and the elevator stops on like the first floor, and Alex Edler, the doors open and it's just you and me in the elevator, and Edler walks in, and like, I think he's so used to doing this, and you know, he just, there's nobody around most of the time, like, so he took like the step in to the elevator without even looking up, and then it was sort of too late for him. Like, he was in the elevator and we were there, and he wasn't gonna like back out and run away. And
no,
like, but he knew who we were with our masks on, and we kind of got the acknowledgement, like, guys, we were both like,
well, I know, he asked us how we were. He's like, but it was resigned. He was like, hey guys, how are you doing? And I was like, making it through, you know, we're just making it through. And the resigned sigh, like, yep.
No, that was funny. It was massive. It was. Like, he just wanted to get out of there. You could tell. And I don't just mean the elevator. I just mean the rink. It was another loss. Like, we know that the end is near for these guys. But it was just one of those funny moments where, you know, he wasn't expecting us to be there. I wasn't expecting a player to jump on the elevator. Fortunately, it was a very quick ride for him, and we went our separate ways. But it was just kind of worth a laugh after the fact. A couple of final thoughts here, because there was a game, actually there's been a couple of games since we've really drilled down here, and the results don't matter. It's six straight losses. Now they're out on the road for six, so who knows where it goes from here. But Jack Rathbone did make his debut. Long awaited, much anticipated, a lot of talk in the market, and I thought he looked like you hoped he would look. 12 minutes and 4 seconds of ice time, didn't play much in the third, but what a welcome to the NHL moment. And he talked about it post-game, to have both McDavid and Draisaitl bearing down on you on a 2-on-1, and he handled it like a champ.
Yeah, he did. He's a good player, man. He's a good player, and I think we're going to see, like, if there's one guy who should get a lot of run, for me anyway, over the balance here, it's him. Because for me, and he said post game that, you know, he's a confident guy, and he is, but and he showed it, especially with his skills with the puck. But he will benefit so much from some additional pattern recognition opportunities and just like getting his feet wet, because the skills are there, man. Like, he looks like an NHL player. He skates like a fast NHL player. You know, I just think he needs to get acclimatized, and he'll be ready. Like, I don't think he needs a ton of seasoning here. This is not a guy, you know, we don't need to like pull out the heavy salt. We don't need to go Salt Bay on this. Like, he just needs a little bit more time, and I think he can contribute meaningfully and provide more, frankly, than any, you know, young Canucks defender other than Quinn Hughes next season without a ton of additional ice time. I mean, I thought that before the season, although I will say he didn't look ready to me at training camp. This is not a looking back and being like, they should have had him in the lineup all along. But I just see so much more there with Rathbone than Ylevi personally. They both play the left side. There is going to be competition for minutes for the Canucks on that left side between those two guys, presumably. I don't think you can go Hughes, Ylevi, Rathbone down the left side next year. No. So, you know, anyway, I thought it was a really impressive debut. He's a really impressive player. And as we see more, as we see him get more comfortable, more assertive in that environment, like, we're going to start to see some of the other attributes of his game that he showed at the college level. And one of those, I'm telling you, J-Pat, you're going to see it eventually. There's a fire in that belly. Like, this guy can play with more edge. He is not just skilled puck moving D. Like, there is more there in terms of that competitive edge, physical edge too. I'm really excited to see what he can bring. I thought it was a really solid debut for the debutant.
All right. And speaking of fire in the belly, I mean,
we got to talk JT Miller.
What a night. Like, that was a night for JT Miller. There've been a few this year. That was a night. There was just a lot going on.
I will not hear, even before Travis Green had spoken, right? I sent my tweet defending JT Miller, right? Cause I'm just like, this guy plays 20 plus minutes a night. Yeah, I mean, following that game, he'd played 86 minutes, more than 86 minutes of NHL hockey over 6 days, man, 6 days. And yeah, he's trying to do too much. Of course he's trying to do too much. The Canucks have a bottom six that has combined to play 87 games for their team this season and has contributed 4 points, 2 goals at 5-on-5. Like, what are you expecting from your overtaxed star players playing a condensed schedule? A guy like JT Miller playing out of position. You know, like, he's not at his best. He's not at his best. And he feels like, if I don't do this, if I don't do it all, we're fucked. And some nights he's right. Like, it's crazy to me that, you know, he scores that unbelievable goal to make it a 1-goal deficit the other day. And it's him going through single-handedly like 6 guys. Like, if you're going to praise him for that, you have to accept that, like, part of what comes with it is going to be some, you know, ugly giveaways. One of which, by the way, was, yeah, not the best pass, but it was also an unbelievable turnover to be created by McDavid. Like, there's not a lot of NHL players that get that going the other way and turn that into a goal, first off. But secondly, like, yeah, this is going to happen, especially considering how the Canucks are built, what they're relying on for JT Miller. And finally, the fact that he's playing out of position. And like, what do centermen do, J-Pat, more than wingers? They carry the puck more. JT Miller is a little bit giveaway prone. It's the one weakness in a little bit. JT Miller can be giveaway prone. Yeah. JT Miller can be giveaway prone. It's the one weakness in his game. So let's put him in a position where he handles the puck more, is like a very popular take around Vancouver and around the Canucks organization, and it's wrong. Like, it's straight up wrong. Keep JT Miller on the wall. Keep JT Miller on the wall. Like, hashtag keep JT in the middle. This is, it's so bleedingly obvious. And of course, whatever is bleedingly obvious must be ignored in the Vancouver market and sometimes by Canucks management and decision makers too, because that's, you know, that's where we're at in terms of this team.
Yeah, 9 games to go.
There's my rant. There's my rant.
No, I know.
You know, the idea that you should bench JT Miller after those giveaways, like, and what, play Graevac and Boyd 10 minutes in the third while chasing the lead? Like, what are we talking about, man?
More VC.
VC doesn't even play center. It's more Graevac. Like, more Boyd. Right, like, what are we? No, why? No, why? No, we don't need that. We don't need that. I'd way rather see JT Miller try incredibly to make things happen and it occasionally blowing up in his face than Boyd, Horvat, than triple shifting or then double shifting one of Graevac or Boyd while triple shifting Horvat in the third period. Like, come on. Come on. They have no other option, by the way. Like, as much as I think Miller's a winger, you have no other option right now than to play him in the middle. But that doesn't, you know, that doesn't mean you have enough depth to bench him. You clearly don't. And you wouldn't with Sutter in the lineup either. Let's be very clear here. The Canucks don't have enough options. And, you know,
I just worry about, you know, 6 straight losses, 9 to go. No, I don't worry about the sticks. The sticks will be okay. Or the budget, they've got budget for
sticks. The sticks won't.
The sticks won't. But 9 more games of this, clearly the frustration is, it wasn't, part of it's the turnover and the fact it leads to goals, but I think just bigger picture, we know the JT Miller backstory with the, coming out of the COVID break and all the things that he said. I mean, he's been a frustrated guy for a while now, and it'll be interesting to sort of monitor his frustration levels here with these 9 remaining games left on the schedule.
But demonstrative or not, right? Like, JT Miller is the easy person to look at that way, but trust me, there's a lot of frustration around this team right now.
No doubt. If you're looking for other pod options here at The Athletic, there are many, including The Full 60 with Craig Custance. Ned Colletti is a fascinating guy. He's a former Los Angeles Dodger and San Francisco Giants general manager, and he's currently a pro scout for the San Jose Sharks, and he spends The Full 60 with Craig Custance. You can check that out at The Athletic. We always ask that you check out our comments section for each podcast episode. We mentioned that we got some really good feedback on the episode that we did on Tuesday with Katie Strang, and I would recommend, if you have a half an hour, check that out at some time as well. But check out our comments section for each podcast episode at The Athletic app. Rate and subscribe to the VanCast on Apple, and if you're not already a subscriber, go to theathletic.com/VanCast. Receive a subscription for just $3.99 per month. Transfer, let's make like Edler, grab an elevator, and get on out of here.
Bye.
All right. For Tom, J-Pat, thanks as always. We'll be back with another edition of the VanCast on Friday here at The Athletic and theathletic.com.